Well, here the trunk. Thank you.
I was gonna do that anyway.
Yeah, I was gonna do that next.
Okay.
Okay.
Robert, we're ready, sir.
You're good.
Bring it to your attention. Very good. Okay, we are now back at the table, no pun intended. Starting with modification of 6883 submitted by Rebecca Quinn on behalf of the Florida Department of Emergency Management. Turn it over to you all.
Okay, good morning. My name is Steve Martin, and I'm the State Floodplain Manager in the Division of Emergency Management. I serve as the designated State Floodplain Manager for the state of Florida. So I wanted to just give a real brief overview and then ask our consultant that assisted us in development of the amendments that are proposed here to handle some of the technical issues. This dates back to about 2009 when the Florida Commission Work Group was appointed to look at several issues, and it was decided to table the CCCL revisions till later after several the other issues were worked out and the flood provisions were put into the Florida Building Code. So just wanted to mention that there's 70% of the land seaward of the CCCL is also in a FEMA Zone V, and this highlights the benefits of minimizing the differences as much as possible while retaining statutory CCCL requirements and incorporating the Commission's declaration statements, the Florida Environmental Commission. So our office took the lead with DEP staff to develop the submitted proposal. We actually started working on this in 2010, but again, we had to delay that until other issues relating to the flood provisions were worked out. So in developing the proposal for you to review today, we worked with several organizations to review and comment on the draft that we prepared. We worked closely with DEP staff and tried to really think about and incorporate the declaration statements that had been part of the history of the CCCL program. But we worked with Building Officials Association of Florida, the Florida Floodplain Management Association, the Florida Shore and Beach Preservation Association, the Florida Structural Engineers, and the Florida Home Builders Association in distribution of the information, and then we had telephone conversations with them to get input on that. We think it's important to keep in mind that the GIS analysis that we prepared really laid out the areas by county that could be affected by this, and there 71% of the FEMA's Zone V is seaward of the CCCL?
Well, the opposite. 75% of the land seaward of the CCCL is Zone V.
Okay, there we go. Thank you. 18 or 19% is in the Zone A, and 10% is Zone X. So we're talking about pretty small areas that are seaward of the CCCL. But earlier this week, our office received some input from representatives from BASF, the High-Rise Committee, and so we're working with them to incorporate those suggestions and comments, and so we will submit a modification in the next 45 days for public comment, in the public comment period, and so I'd really like to have Rebecca kind of handle some of the technical issues on this. Thank you.
Thanks. Of course, I know y'all all scoured the background material, but I was just asked a question as to why this issue, you know, why is it important to try to minimize these differences? And that takes me back a couple of years ago, quite a few actually, when I had Steve's position in a different state. And I can't remember why, but I spoke with one of Steve's predecessors about the CCCL and how do people resolve differences with the V-zone. And I basically answered, the answer he gave me was basically, well, local officials do the right thing. and I tell you, you know, as someone who's committed to working with local governments and state governments to actually do the right thing, that was a fairly unsatisfying answer, especially when a couple of, I mean, because basically that means everybody on every single project has, in theory at least, has to figure out the differences. And everybody has to decide whether what those the higher restrictions or provisions are and which prevail. And that's a considerable burden, and of course it leaves the door open for more variations and interpretations. As mentioned in the background, DEP, sometime in 2010, I believe, DEP initiated a repeal of their regulation 62B, I forget the specifics, in part because CCCL requirements have been in the building code for a long time. But it was also a significant step in opening or clearing the way for this proposal before you. Of course, the statute is still there, and that was part of what we were careful to retain any specific provisions. We did prepare a side-by-side of the existing 3109 with FEMA's Zone B, with the ASCE 24 requirements. If you're not familiar with the flood provisions in the building code, the details are contained in a reference standard, ASCE 24, Flood Resistant Design and Construction. We drilled down even further and had Chris Jones, a highly qualified coastal engineer with deep FEMA experience and a lot of experience here in Florida with CCCL, do a comparison of the structural provisions of ASCE 24 with the structural provisions in 3109. That comparison is in the background material. So just a few key features. 3109 currently and under the proposal only applies to habitable structures. We do think that there's a phrase in there, it refers to habitable structures, buildings and structures, and that may muddy the waters there, but the intent is that it does only apply to the defined term habitable structures. Of course, all buildings and structures are also subject to the 1612 flood requirements if they're located in a flood zone. So even things that aren't habitable structures are still regulated. They're regulated under 1612. Of course, certain work on existing buildings isn't included. That's a statutory exemption. But if any of that work triggers the flood requirement for substantial improvement or repair of substantial damage, it would have to comply with 1612. If you've worked in this flood area for a while, you know that there are some differences between the DEP 100-year storm elevation and the FEMA base flood elevation. The proposal requires use of the higher flood elevation that preserves the CCCL requirement. And then when you're actually designing buildings, it requires the higher of what's in the floor elevations or lowest floor, the highest of what's in ASCE 24 or what's required by 3109 or a locally adopted flood ordinance that may have increased the flood elevations. I've got several others I could speak to, but I think what I'll stop there with and just say, we know that one of the areas that we've gotten some questions on are where are these FEMA zones, Zone A and X, that are seaward of the CCCL. And we know that that will be an area we'll be taking a look at to maintain consistency with some previous deck statements, which we may not have quite captured in here. So what we want is for you to, whatever your action is that allows us to bring it back in the next comment period.
Right, thank you. All right, so are there others who wish to speak on this issue? Robert, would you like to speak?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
to say my name.
Is that? Yeah, we'll call you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the Special Occupancy TAC, members of staff and your council. My name is Robert Fine with offices at 333 Southeast 2nd Avenue in Miami. And I'm here today speaking on proposed code modification 6083 involving coastal construction and Chapter 3109 of the Florida Building Code. Please incorporate the materials that we provided for you, I think Joe handed them out earlier today, into the record of this hearing. I would have liked to have gotten those comments to you earlier, but I had some misbehaving discs in my neck that slowed me down for a couple months, and we got them fixed, but we're here today to give you a few thoughts. The code modification proponents state as their rationale the desire to, I guess, minimize or eliminate the complications from having two sets of standards that occur or basically crash into each other at the coastal construction control line. And that may be a commendable goal. Here's the thing. You have two sets of regulations that really govern two different things, two different elevation zones, and rules that are written to deal with each, with the unique issues in each. What the proposed code modification, as of now, does is to simplify the situation by basically classifying everything seaward of the CCCL as a velocity zone. On a statewide basis, this seems to have very little impact. You heard of small percentages. But when you get to local areas, you look at Miami-Dade County and Broward County together, that becomes 80% or so of the land seaward of the CCCL is either AE or X zones. 80% of the developable area, that's a lot. So what happens is it creates an arbitrary taking of development rights from properties that in some cases have been purchased and financed over the past decade or even more at costs ranging in the 8 to 9 figure range. Not exaggerating, 8 to 9 figures. Often these sites are already bordered by developed sites that were constructed under the current CCCL or coastal construction regulations. So if you can picture someone who's gone to their bank, borrowed $100 million to buy a piece of land to develop after having done appropriate and responsible due diligence, but doing so under the current regulations. And now as they're ready to develop, they're told by the building official that you can't build the parking you need. The amenities that you'd be providing to people you'd be either renting rooms to or selling units to, you can't provide them in the same place. They either have to be much further back from the ocean or lower. You end up with a product that you either can't sell at all or you have to sell at a much lower price. And when you work this backwards, it diminishes the value of the land, the value of the bank's collateral. No way for this person who just borrowed $100 million or maybe did 5 years ago to pay the bank back, and so on. It becomes a very big problem of tipping dominoes. This very realistic scenario goes to some of the statutory criteria that's been provided by the proponents in support of the proposed mod in the application. For example, under impact to building and property owners relative to the cost of compliance with the code, the proponent's response is owners will realize savings because RDPs and plan reviewers will not have to each determine the more restrictive of the CCCL and flood requirements. Really? A few permit dollars versus tens of millions of dollars or more? Hundreds or thousands of jobs lost when construction projects can't be done or the operation of these buildings? Or impact to industry relative to the cost of compliance? The design and construction industry will have a clear path to compliance with both CCCL and flood requirements. Well, that's only if they have a project to design and construct in the first place. I can go to small business, but I think you get my point. Now, as I said, I'm from South Florida, which is really the home of coastal sea rise and what we see, notwithstanding what we hear from our governor. And I appreciate the need to look at and maybe modernize and simplify these code provisions, but not by dropping a blanket over everything seaward of the CCCL and saying, poof, you're a V-zone with all that entails. With all that said, I'd like to really like to recognize and thank the proponents for taking the time the other day to start the process of discussing these concerns on a conference call that included Christy Brush, who you'll hear from in a moment, and Rebecca Quinn, who you just heard from. I will tell you that I was humbled by the level of knowledge on that call. And without speaking for either one of them, I believe that each of these consultants feel that with the opportunity to sit down and really go at the language of 3109 and keeping in mind the legitimate concerns of both the proponent agencies and the property owners who will be affected by the proposed mod, that they can likely come up with language that everybody can reasonably live with. A lot of territory was covered on that call, but 3109 is a very detailed, complicated chapter that it's one of those, every time you read it, you find five more things. So there's a lot of work to be done in that effort. So I know you're gonna hear from Christy Brush in a moment, and she's gonna set out some of those specific issues of concern. But when all is said and done, I respectfully request that the TAC defer its recommendation until its next meeting to allow Christy and her colleagues and Ms. Quinn to have time to meet and beat 3109 around and come up with code modification language that both the affected property owners and the regulating agencies, and of course, ultimately the building officials who have to enforce this, what they need. And during that time, the woman could and should talk by phone, meet in person, and really come up with a good code provision. There's just too much at stake not to get this code provision right. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Rob. All right, does anybody else wish to speak on this?
Christy? And Jeff, after Christy, we have a gentleman named Richard who flew up from Miami. He's a developer with Oceanfront Land. We'd like to?
Sure.
Okay.
No problem.
Christy.
Okay, keep.
She'll keep it.
Since we gave you double time and we gave the others double time, we're still going to start limiting the comments to about 3 minutes each. So I think it's clear at this point that there's a good faith effort to work this out the next time window. And I think the tax, as the chair has indicated, would probably be amenable to that. Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
All right. So I'll do my best not to repeat what Robert said. My name is Christy Brush with Moffitt and Nickel, offices in Miami, Florida. I have about 18 years of experience working on a daily basis with both the CCCL regulations as well as flood code compliance for both private sector and public sector development clients. Robert recently asked me to do a technical review of this proposed modification. I had a very short amount of time, but was able to issue a memorandum, which I believe we're giving to you to place on record here, or have given to you for the record. So I won't cover all of that, but as a summary, we have quite a number of concerns about the language itself, where there's language that's confusing and unclear, and we already started talking to Rebecca and DEM about clarifying that, some technical inconsistencies. What I'll really touch on is just a little bit more information about some of the issues of more substance that have those financial and functional impacts to building design for property owners. So essentially, applying a V-zone criteria to A-zones and X-zones will practically eliminate a percentage of the buildable and sellable portion of that space. V-zone criteria does not allow the way the code does right now, particularly in low-rise buildings, things like lobbies and retail. So right now under the code, you can, in an A-zone, for example, if you comply with the flood criteria and put your lobby level of your hotel at a +8 elevation, you put your retail shop at a +8 or +9 elevation. Under the new code, that use would have to be elevated up quite significantly higher above the DEP's 100-year storm elevation. So it could eliminate basically a whole floor of commercial use in buildings that are in, for example, an AE zone that would be exposed now to V-zone criteria. The code as written right now is more restrictive in terms of the non-habitable use definition. It eliminates non-habitable use, like I just mentioned, in low-rise buildings in certain areas at what are now lobby levels. The habitable structure definition and jurisdiction is expanded the way the code's written right now. I don't know if that was really the intent, but we have concerns that it appears that a standalone building with a non-habitable use only, such as like a public bathroom, would be considered habitable and subject to 3109 because it's not an accessory use. The code would imply requiring a pile foundation on a public restroom, a lifeguard station, something like that, that would be elevated up higher than they're required to be elevated now, maybe as much as 10 feet above grade, which aesthetics aside is functionally something very difficult to deal with. There's some issues about additional restrictions on short parallel shear walls and some other design criteria or things that are just essentially not clear. So we definitely appreciate the dialogue that we've had so far, and we look forward to working to at least have a clear code. If you guys are aware, you probably all are, of the history of this code. The DEP originally had the structural criteria in their code, and it got just pulled out and plopped into the Florida Building Code. So we think it would perhaps be more appropriate, now that there are dozens of building officials looking at a code that evolved and had certain precedents and was interpreted in a certain way over the course of, I don't know how many years, Gene, you guys had that code evolving, the course of 20 years perhaps. There certainly are clarifications. There are things that DEP just knew were the way things were done that weren't necessarily spelled out in the code. So we think it makes sense to perhaps clarify Section 3109 and make it clear so we don't have to keep pursuing declaratory statements as to what the code meant to say or how it was applied and interpreted. So we don't have to keep going back to DEP's interpretations. The code makes sense for the code to say what it needs to say in and of itself, so building officials can read it and know how to apply it, and consultants can read it, and architects and know how to apply it. But to just consider as a solution to put everything in a V zone is creating a lot of confusion and perhaps unintended impact to business owners and property owners.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Is there others who wish to speak on the issue? Yes, sir. Come on up.
Sure. Good morning. Thank you for letting me speak. My name is Rick Chitwood. I'm Vice President of Construction and Director of Development for the Trump Group. We're a large developer in South Florida. We've been in South Florida for over 40 years.
Excuse not Donald Trump.
No, it's not. It's a different Trump. We're not running for, and I'm not the I'm not his vice presidential candidate either. So we're actually, my Trumps are from South Africa. So we have built and developed more than 20 high-rises in South Florida, presently all on the ocean. We have had no real confusion in the 20 years I've been doing it with permitting or with building officials. I've been to staff many times here in Tallahassee working with the DEP. I have projects right now that I am currently selling, developing, and future developments that all tie into one piece. With this proposed change, the other two phases of this project can't happen. I mean, the plans and the performers and the monies we've got from foreign investors and other investors, the project's not gonna happen. It can't happen because it doesn't fit the plan. So we're looking at it as, we haven't seen any real confusion. We were there with Andrew and we were there with everybody. We understand all the zones. They've been that way for as many years as I've been building. You know, you have the AE, the AEs, and the X zones and the V zones. We design by them. We know how to build by them. We've been doing it for, like I say, 20 years. This is going to have a very negative impact on development in South Florida. And besides that, we have new properties that we bought as a single piece of property, but existing between two other properties. This is going to have a lot more of an advantage than we will be able to have, because we can't build to the same requirements and give the same amenities as they have on their properties. So as far as developers and builders, I think it'll be a loss of jobs. I think it'll be a loss of tax revenues to cities. And nobody's been really able to tell me or show me what the real problem is. What's causing the problem? Who and what problem has caused this change? That's really all I have to say.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Appreciate you asking.
I didn't say my name, so if you would let me, go ahead.
Sure. Doug, come on up.
I'd like to clarify that for the record. The original speaker, the proponent of this modification, was Ms. Rebecca Quinn.
Afternoon. My name's Doug Bach. You've seen me before. I represent the Florida Home Builders Association. Sort of what they've been saying, I want to kind of put it from our perspective. And first of all, if I need to offer an apology to them, the Florida Home Builders Association did participate in the development of this. The mea culpa in this for me is that we as an association continue to see a lot of our issues through the eyes of a residential builder. And the feedback we got from the residential house, individual house, was no big deal. More and more, the South Florida developers, because everything down there is going vertical, have participating more and more in our association. And that's where the problem is. And you've heard that. A couple things, and I'll be just to summarize, I would like to see this issue have a negative roll call. What's interesting is it's in a special occupancy tag because it's a state agency, because these aren't special occupancies. These are private sector developers. They're not an educational facility. They're not a healthcare facility that I think of as special, but I guess it's because it's a state agency, it comes here. But it's not, the impact is not on the turf that most people sitting around the table have experience with. It is a cost, and you've heard that I do not hear the problem that it is fixing other than the regulators looked at the issue and these are things that they want to do. Their heart's in the right place, but this is a cost issue. And I think more and more you are seeing cost of code changes become much more a part of the discussion than possibly historically it's been. And I would like you to consider that cost on the private sector, accompanied with not a definitive problem you're trying to solve. Did I finish under time so you saved time to get to lunch earlier? All right. That was my goal. I hope I get your vote for that.
You saved exactly 10 seconds. Thank you, Doug.
And I'll try to be 20 seconds shorter than Doug was.
Go ahead, Joe.
Joe Belcher, and actually, I was the one that alerted the high-rise council to this change, so I'll just go ahead and tell you that. I am working with the high-rise council with the Florida Home Builders. Also representing the Masonry Association of Florida, the Florida Concrete Product Association, and the Florida Independent Concrete and Associated Products Group. And we all would request the NAR vote. You've heard a lot of reasons that show there's a lot of problems with this particular proposal. We have been very pleased with the positive response from both DEM, DEP, and their consultant, Rebecca Quinn, to work on resolving these issues, and we think we can do that. If not, then we'll go the other way. This was presented, if you look at the reasons, primarily the big thing was clarification. This code change does a lot more than clarify the provisions. It vastly increases the costs. And I think that in the view of simplification, they just said, let's just make it all V-zone. And they did away with a lot of things that are currently you can do. And you can do that under DEP's interpretation of their own rules. So there's really no reason to be changing this. Or if we're going to change it, we need to at least recognize it's a change, it's an expensive change, and it's not just simple clarification. And we're not going to be saving any money because the plan is going to be cheaper. Okay? One last item. There is confusion amongst the building officials with the flood provision. That is because in the recent years, they've picked up flood. In the previous addition to the code, it was not in the code. They had floodplain managers at the local level that took care of those issues. Now suddenly it's in the building code. So it's going to take a while for the building officials to get up to speed with that. So that's the reason. We don't need to completely rewrite the rule because the people are trying to figure out what's in the existing rule. Thank you.
Anybody else who wishes to speak on the issue? Did you want to say something else as a proponent before we go back to the TAC and
Yes, just a couple of brief rebuttals. There are 468 communities in the Florida that participate in the National Flood Insurance Program. More than 350 of them either have already adopted or are in the process of adopting a code-coordinated floodplain management ordinance. So lay that aside. You've already got our expression of our intent was to preserve CCCL without conflicting with NFIP, so we plan to do that. I also remind you that you've heard from Miami-Dade and Broward, probably the two most sophisticated counties in terms of both their building officials, their floodplain managers, their design professionals, and their builders. But as you can see, CCCL affects many other counties. So the objective is not is to address these differences and inconsistencies between flood and CCCL that will help all of the communities. And again, we are looking forward to working with the folks who spoke to address their questions. And again, I didn't say my name. Rebecca Quinn, RC Quinn Consulting, speaking on behalf of the Division of Emergency Management.
Thank you. All right, is there anybody else who needs to say anything before we go back to the deck? Okay, I mean, it sounds like there's a strategy in place, and that's probably the way to proceed. All right, is there a second?
I'll second. Gene Schalecki will second for the purpose of a negative roll call.
Is there any discussion from the TAC? All those in favor of the motion, or in favor, say aye. Zero. All opposed?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's 0-7 in favor, which is a negative, no affirmative recommendation. And is the recommendation to provide the opportunity for the agencies to work with the stakeholders and to address comments that were submitted to the record through Mr. Robert Fine's memo?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Very good. Thank you. All right. We'll be hearing this one again. Very good. All right.
As well the structural tab.
I know.
Yes.
I was thinking of that, actually, just to remember the week after next. Okay. Mr. Skip Gregory, you're still here, sir. 6855.
685, Skip Gregory, Help Facility Consulting. 6855 is the revised reference updates for the hospital and the nursing home design requirements. This is a brought the books in. This is for the hospitals and outpatient facilities. This one's for the residential facilities, such as nursing homes and assisted living facilities. These are design manuals adopted, or rather created by a nationally recognized committee of over 120 people. Scott Waltz is on that committee, and I have been on that committee for 25 years. We're meeting next week on the 2018 edition. This document is updated every 4 years. So when does this sixth edition of the building code go into effect approximately?
It's December 2017.
So by the time the building code gets into effect, it'll already be 3 years out of date with this particular copy, but it's the best we can do. Florida will be behind the rest of the country. So I'm going to make a plug for updating reference standards during the glitch code cycles and not having to wait for 4 years, which would require statutory change. But I'm going to go on record as saying that I would support, and I think many people would support reference standards being allowed to be updated more often than every major code change to the building code.
All right. Is there any other public comment? Is there a second?
A second.
Is there any discussion? Support. Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It's unanimous as submitted. Next is 6458, which was submitted by Brian Holland. Anybody here speaking on this modification? And there are
are some comments.
This is mainly an update to the standard already in the code, which is the lighting standard, lighting protection system.
No, this, what is this doing, Bob?
It's updating the standards for lighting protection system, lighting protection system.
All right, so is there any public comment? Hearing none, go to the attack. Is there a second?
Take the board.
Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Unanimous as submitted. All right, next is Rebecca. It's 6566.
Rebecca Quinn, RC Quinn Consulting, speaking on behalf of the Florida Division of Emergency Management. I'll just add one thing to the reason statement. The 2010 Florida Building Code did not retain Appendix G. Is that right? No, it did. It did.
2010 did not.
It was retained. We did not expect that to be carried forward. Even though FEMA has worked on it, and I've done that work on behalf of FEMA, as I mentioned, we have a FEMA-approved Florida Building Code coordinated floodplain management ordinance, which means Appendix G is not necessary. We've done all the work. We've got 350-some communities so far have adopted it or working on it, and the rest we expect to come into place within the next 2 years, we hope less than 2 years. So we just ask that this appendix, it would be confusing if someone used this and not fully consistent with what we already have approved by FEMA.
Anybody else wish to comment? Okay. Coming to the attack, is there a second?
Shalaki, second for support.
All right, is there any discussion? No discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It's unanimous as supported. Okay, we have one more amendment, which is a local technical amendment that was submitted by Pinellas County Construction Licensing Board. Does the public wish to speak regarding this local technical amendment and whether it should be carried forward as an amendment, as a modification to the Florida Building Code? Seeing no public comment. Is there a second for the TAC?
Shalaki, a second for support.
Okay. Support to include it?
No. Yes.
This is the CCL step.
I understand.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I'm trying to
Did you ask for public comment in opposition?
I did ask if anyone wanted to comment on it. Well, either way, but guess what? If you missed it, come on up and make a comment.
Come on in.
I said, is there anybody here who wants to speak?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm so used to the ICC process. Rebecca Quinn, RC Quinn Consulting, on behalf of the Florida Division of Emergency Management. We've just spent time talking about the proposal DEM is going to bring forward, with the next cycle. And while we understand Pinellas has worked out some things with the DEP, and I've not looked at this proposal in great detail, I think that if it's retained as a local amendment, that's one thing, but I would question whether it's valid, and certainly until and unless we look at it in terms of consistency with the NFIP, and would urge that you allow it to remain as a local amendment rather than incorporate it and replace 3109.
Anybody else in the public wish to comment? Yes, Robert.
Just kidding.
It's all right if you want to. Okay, so maybe just a quick, my brief explanation. What happens is the local technical amendments will sunset. They have to be submitted to the Florida Building Commission, and if it doesn't go into statewide, they could then go to the process to reinstate. Correct, Joe?
Pinellas County has a whole package of amendments that they've had, I believe, since the 2001 edition of the code, and they've readopted them each and every year because they are really intended for local application. They haven't been generated for regional or statewide use. So typically, they're submitted as technical amendments just through the course of adopting them. and is subject to this review, but they've never actually come forward to advocate for their inclusion in the Florida Building Code on any, for any purpose, and probably already have it slated in their work plan to readopt it following the implementation of the 2000, well, the seventh edition, or sixth edition, excuse me, of the Building Code.
And just an interesting side note, not speaking for or against in any way, shape, or form, but today, no local technical amendment has ever made it into the Florida Building Code.
That's correct.
Just for informational purposes.
Okay, so let me refract and say second for a negative roll call so that I can look at the issue further.
Okay. That's your choice. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of this amendment, say aye. Zero, all opposed?
Aye.
Zero to seven, no affirmative recommendation, and the rationale is that this is a local issue should be resolved at the local level. Is that a fair statement? Members, does that summarize it?
It's a fair statement. One of the issues here is there's an actual delegation agreement between DEP and the Pinellas County Construction Licensing Board. And so I need to go back and look at that agreement.
Okay. Okay, well, it can certainly be brought back as that always can. Mr. Chairman, I believe that concludes the review of amendments. Did I get them all, Mom?
Yes, man. How was that?
All right, so let's do a roll for the record. I guess we should do a roll call.
Yes.
If anyone's left the room, please identify yourself.
I was just because I haven't seen anybody gone.
There you go.
Oh, goodness. Okay. Chairman Phillips here. Gene Chalecki.
He's
here.
They're all still here.
Yeah, they are. Tim Curtin. Frank Frail. Charlie Frank.
I'm here.
Jim Guinness, Doug Melvin,
here.
Philip Saunders, Bob Vinson,
here.
And Scott Waltz,
here.
So we have all the two.
Same seven.
Okay.
I believe that you could ask for a motion to
stand.
We stand adjourned if there are no other business.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Good job.